Man, I'm grateful for these guys and our band and our lighting guys and our sound. And can we thank them again? Yeah, our leaders at the church and those who are watching your kids right now and maybe greeted you on the way in and those who got bagels for you. It's just awesome to be grateful. It fills you up and it fills the people around you up. And like Chris mentioned earlier, when you think of Fred Rogers, I mean, you're not thinking master poker player, right? And there's a little clicky bait about that because we don't know that he ever played cards, but man, he emulated the techniques that a master poker player would have. In fact, Yuvar Poker Player, there's a kind of a blog website for kind of skills for those who want to be better at their poker. And one of the things they talk about is if you want to be a master poker player, Poker Pro News says, you need to be able to master your emotions from a grateful core. Part of not getting all the pressure, all the anxiety, all the stakes or high moments, you need to make sure your emotions don't get the best of you. And they actually encourage people who play poker every night to think of three things you're grateful for, besides poker, that you can meditate on. The things that you say in your heart but hasn't necessarily made it to your mouth or your lips or your mind. When's the last time you were thankful for the janitors, for time? When's the last time you were thankful for your health until you don't have it? Last time you were thankful for not just the things about your kids or grandkids that drive you crazy, but just go, man, I'm really thankful for them. How can we live life from a grateful core? The second thing, there was a master poker player, and he was writing kind of on the secrets to winning national championships in his book, Play Like the Pros. And he said, a master poker player knows how to read the cues of people's body language and those silent communication. And man, Fred Rogers was a genius at this. He'd walk into a room with plenty going on. He would just sense, he would see an eyebrow up or a clenched jaw and would just move toward people that he sensed needed some encouragement, needed a listening ear. What if all of us live from a grateful core, mastering our emotions and our anger? At the same time, also, we learned how to read the cues of the people around us so we could be present with them. When Tom Hanks was promoting the movie, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, a lot of the press tour he did with Fred's wife. Fred had passed away. And when his wife started doing the press tour, one of the things she'd said earlier is, I want you to know that my husband was not a saint. Scandal, scandal. I wonder what she really means by that. And she said, well, I'll tell you what I mean by that. He worked on it. It wasn't something that just came natural to him, like he's got a neat personality. He worked at being grateful. He worked at being present. And if you ask Fred Rogers, he'd say, well, don't try and be like me. I was trying to be like my hero, Jesus. I learned how to be present. I learned how to be grateful by every day being in prayer and connecting with my hero. They said one time, they said, does Fred ever get angry? She says, well, I don't know, but I sure do. She said, and Fred always had this ability to bring an empathy and a gratefulness to calm me. She said, I'd be coming home from maybe a chauvinistic car repair man who talked to me in that patronizing way, and I'd come home and tell Fred, I can't believe this happened. I'd get all angry and frustrated, and he'd listen, and he'd ask questions. Then he'd also remind me after he listened for a while that maybe that mechanic had a bad day too. Let's give empathy to him, and I wanted him to be as mad as I was. Then the next day I realized that, you know what, I need to even think of people who drove me crazy, who are my enemies, so to speak. And he just brought this calm even to our marriage. So I want to look at those two qualities today. Fred Rogers could read a room, and he lived with an attitude of gratitude. And he made a disciplined act every day to get close to God in prayer, get into his Bible, to figure out how he could do that. How do I live with an attitude of gratitude, but also how am I open, even during my busy day, to read the room and draw near to somebody who might need help? How might all of us live a little bit better lives? Our lives might be filled with a little more joy if we were just a little bit more present in the lives we're currently living. Let's look at those two poker traits today. The first one is the ability to read the room. Fred Rogers could read the room. In fact, in his book, The Good Neighbor, the life and work of Fred Rogers is just story after story after story of people talking about how he read the room for them, and in a quick moment, a short conversation, he was just able to meet people where they were. He just sensed what they need and engage with them. He tells a story one day, he was visiting a hospital. He was doing some work with a bunch of kids. And as all the hustle and bustle of kids and interacting and being present with them, he just noticed somebody walk by in the hallway. It was a janitor. And again, lots of people cleaning up at a hospital, but there's something about that janitor that Fred sensed. Maybe it was his shoulders were down. Maybe it was his eyebrow pulled up. Maybe it was his jaw. But Fred Rogers, after interacting with the kids, he said, "I'll be right back." And he walked over and he came to that janitor. He says, "Hey, I'm Fred Rogers. What's your name?" He said, "Can I ask you something? What's the toughest part of your day?" The janitor didn't have a lot of people engage with him, let alone that question. He says, "Well, right now I'm taking care of my daughter, and she's been very ill for a long time. So I think the toughest part is just knowing that burden is waiting for me at home, and it's why I do what I do, but it's also just weighing on me." And Fred looked him in the eyes and said, "Man, that's got to be tough. You're a good dad. I want you to know that your service here, keeping everything clean and keeping every kid safe, your strength is a gift to your daughter and it's a gift to this hospital." Man, he walked on his day and said, "Man, I couldn't believe that little interaction meant so much." In fact, his daughter did eventually get better and she ended up volunteering at the hospital for many, many years because she realized what little it takes to read the room to encourage somebody else. One day they were on set and they were putting all the pieces together and changing some scripts and changing some lighting design. And the lighting designer who had been worked with them for years was just in the background working. And they were calling out cues and where he needed to stand, what he needed to say, and what the puppets need to say. And right in the middle of full production mode, hold on a second. This happened all the time. He walked over and he saw the lighting guy making another modification to the light. And he said, "Man, thank you for your service. I want you to know what you do really makes a difference. And of all the change we're making today, there are millions of kids' lives are being shaped because of what you're doing in the background." "Wow, thank you, Mr. Rogers." Like in the middle of all the hustle and bustle, he had the ability to just notice somebody needed a little bit of encouragement. Fred Rogers was interviewed by PBS interviewer Charlie Rose many, many times. And one of them was after 30 years of service, he sat down with Charlie Rose and he begins the interview this way. He says, "Fred, you've been investing in kids' life for 30 years. What number of kids and people do you think you've impacted?" And Fred almost intuitively says, "I don't care about the number. I don't care about the number. If I could just help one kid, it would make the difference." "Huh." He said, "In fact, what my goal has been is to make every child feel loved, make every child know they're special and cared for. I want them to know that their inside life is as important as their outside life, that feelings are mentionable and feelings are manageable when we mention them." He said, "But you know, I probably won't know how many people are impacted for sure until I get to heaven." Charlie Rose says, "Well, what do you feel like is most important to you?" Fred says, "Well, I have this quote that I keep in my office. It's from Little Prince. What is essential is invisible to the eye. What is essential is often invisible to the eye." He says, "What do you mean by that?" He said, "Well, the part that we show everybody else, the part that everybody sees, the part that's on the main stage," he said, "is rarely what's most important. It's usually what's happening in the wings. And so I try and draw out what's happening in the wings, the essential stuff that's invisible when I'm interacting with people." To which Charlie Rose says, "Well, we've seen you on TV for 30 years. What is essential to you?" Fred says, "Well, my spiritual life is invisible to the eye. You won't know about it unless you ask me. My family life is essential to me. You won't know about it unless you ask it." And then, as he often did, he says, "How about you, Charlie? What's essential to you? What's the invisible part of your life? And Charlie's like, he's doing it to me again. He's trying to get into my life. And he was so good. And even when the interview was about him. And so Charlie talked a little about his life, what was essential to him, what made the biggest difference in his life. And they came back and said, what have you learned from the kids over 30 years? And Fred Rogers says, well, I think I've learned a lot from the kids. He said, it reminds me of Jesus who said, let all the children come unto me that I might learn from them. And that's not exactly the wording of Jesus' last phrase, but I think Jesus said the kingdom of God belongs to children, and there's so much you can learn from their innocence, and they don't hide. They just kind of, if they're angry, they're angry, and if they're sad, they're sad. There's just less pretending, and I've learned a lot about being honest with myself from them. One more story about Fred's ability to read the room is he was meeting with a senator, different one from the first week. He's in the 80s this time, big policy discussion, funding again for PBS, and they disagreed on the different sides of the issue, and they were going to have this lunch meeting. But Fred, as usual, says starting about the policy, the principles, he started by reading the room and wanting to get to know the guy, the senator. So they sit down across from lunch, and he says, Senator, can I ask you something? Who is it in your life that helped you believe in yourself? I'd love to know more about that. And what they thought was going to be kind of a hostile beginning to a conversation began to talk about the people in his life who had helped him become who he was, and just became this very human conversation. They created a friendship by which they could talk about differences and talk about different opinions, but it came from a place of caring about each other individually. Despite their differences politically, despite their differences on the policy, Fred had this ability to read the room in almost every circumstance, from janitors to senators. Again, if you ask Fred, he would say he got this wisdom from the Bible and from Jesus. In fact, the Bible's got this beautiful picture of this idea of seeing diversity amongst people and seeing people different from you as something you can engage in. In the book of Romans, which is a letter written by a church leader named Paul, it says this, for we, the communities, people, the church, every organization, every family, we have many members, right? But one body. And they don't have the same function. You don't function the same way. Different personalities function different ways. We all have different gifts according to different talents or grace we've been given to us. Some of us, we're really good at ministering, which just means seeing needs and drawing near to those needs. Let those people be good at that. There's people who can teach well. May they can be good at teaching. People who are good exhorters or encouragers, may they do that through exhorting. People who give, man, they can give liberally. Those who lead, they lead with diligence. He who shows mercy, man, we need some mercy people to comfort us. May they do that with cheerfulness. Then he kind of summarizes by saying, here's how you interact with people. Here's how you read the room. Be kindly affectionate to one another. With brotherly love. In honor, giving preference to one another. Man, isn't that what Fred did? He learned that from Jesus. And here's one phrase that will just teach how to read the room. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Don't get envious or jealous of other people if they got good news and you don't. Rejoice with people who rejoice. But also, weep with those who weep. Comfort, enter their pain when people are having a tough day too. Corinthians, he says something similar. He kind of uses the metaphor almost like Mr. Potato Head, all the different parts. He says, in fact, the body has not only many members, but many. If a foot says, hey, because I'm not a hand, I'm not of the body. Is he therefore not of the body? If an ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I'm not of the body, is therefore not of the body? But God has set up the many members or parts of your family, your community, your company, each one of them, like a body, as he pleases. Try and honor the strengths and differences of the people around you. Now, one of the ways Fred did that is he did that with his puppets. In fact, I ordered a puppet of Daniel the Tiger. It looked a lot bigger on the Amazon screen. But if you recognize these puppets were designed, they were different people in Fred's life, he did the voices for all of them, and they were designed to show different personality traits, different strengths, different temptations, and different weaknesses. There was Lady Elaine Fairchild, always up to a little bit no good, a little mischievous, I think we might do this. In fact, Fred's boys say that this was exactly his sister, their aunt, that it was patterned after. And it was to give voice to the mischievous side of us who maybe sometimes want to do the wrong thing, get in a little bit of trouble, Elaine Fairchild. Then there was Daniel, the striped tiger, who was kind of shy, but very bold and wise. He would say things that people don't say out loud, like, sometimes I feel like I'm a mistake. Sometimes I don't know if anyone cares about me or what I have to say. And Fred likened him to how he felt as a child, being shy, not having a way to give voice to his feelings, and so he often used that puppet to give voice to that side of him. Then it was King Friday the 13th, King Friday, the benevolent king, more like the leader who took assertion, sometimes got a little bossy, sometimes had a little bit too much to do or telling people what to do, but also had a good heart and wanted to accomplish some great things, King Friday the 13th. And then there was X the owl, who really loved education. He was always telling you about the newest thing he learned. He sometimes came across a little self-righteous because of it, because he knew how much he knew. And as Fred described the voices and the characters he created, he said each one was designed so different personalities could relate to each other, understand each other's differences and temptations. He said the authority of the king, the shyness of Daniel Tiger, the adolescence of X the Owl, the mischievous of Elaine Fairchild, we all have lots of facets to who we are, and it's fun to be able to express them. And then he applied that to how we treat each other. Here's what he said. He says, our job in life is to help people realize how rare and valuable each one of us really is, that each of us has something that no one else has. It's our job to encourage each other, to discover that uniqueness, and to provide ways of developing its expression. Isn't that great? With my kids, I had these puppets I played with. They actually come from a leadership. If you've ever been through the DISC Leadership Journal, somebody had applied them to animals. And so the four different personality traits that you might have in your organization, number one is the lion, right? Roar! And this is the assertive one. And in the Bible, God, Jesus, interacts with different leaders, and he changes the way he leads them, and he models them, and he talks to them. In fact, Paul, a church leader, he's definitely the high D. He's the lion. Roar! He's not, put him up. He's a leader. He's a take the next hill. Roar! What are we going to do? He's assertive. He's confident. And yet, sometimes in that assertion, he gets kind of proud and arrogant. So God has to put him on the right track. Because in his leadership, he needed to be directed. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? You're going after the wrong people. Who are you, Lord? I'm Jesus, the one you're persecuting. Oh! It's hard for you to kick against the goads, he says.
What's a goad?
Good question. What's a goad? A goad is a stick that you use to direct oxen. And he said, you're a strong leader, right?
I like to lead things. I like to go places.
But you're kicking against the leadership I'm trying to put into your life. That's how he interacted with a bold, assertive leader. The second personality, the high D's, I'm a D, and an I. The I is the otter, right? The otters are the fun ones, man. They love to have fun. They are enthusiastic. They are social. They are creative. They are fun. And Jesus had people in his life like that. How can we make this more fun? Yeah! How can we bring joy to the situation? Yeah! That's the otters, like Peter. One day, they're out in a boat, and Peter, he sees Jesus walking on water. He's the first one, kind of impulsive. Hey, tell me to walk on the water. Let's go. He walks on the water. Doo, 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 doo. Yeah. Then he looks down. Uh-oh. Blub, 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 blub. Help, 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 help. But he's the one who had the boldness to say, command me to come walk to you, and I will. There's some high eyes in your leadership that have some strengths. Others are like, yeah, they drive me crazy. Yeah, differences do. Some of us are more like the beaver.
We are analytical. We want the facts. We want to make sure if we're going to build this dam that it's built right. And we don't need too much emotion. Let's not get carried away until we've checked it out. This is important. What we're going to build, it's going to stop water. It's going to be our home.
And Jesus interacted with people like this. Thomas, for example, is like,
I don't know that I'm going to believe you're raised from the dead until I see the facts.
So Jesus shows up and says, great, reach in here. Let's look at the hands. Let's check out the facts. Don't be believing. Don't be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas says, all right, I've checked it out. I've looked into it. Thank you for the facts. I believe this.
Then
lastly, there's DISC, there's the loyal ones. There's the ones that, man, they're your friends no matter what happens. This is the dog, the golden retriever. You show up at home and,
so good to see you, so good to see you, so good to see you. Good.
Nobody else is happy to see you, but man, the dog, I love it, I'm going to love him, I'm going to call him George. Oh, I love it, love, love, love it, right? Now, Jesus had a disciple like this. His name is John. And John even calls himself the disciple that Jesus loved. Jesus just loved him so much, and he loved Jesus so much. Now, he had an anger problem. Sometimes they called him the son of thunder because he'd lose his temper all the time. But Jesus loved him so well. He's like, you know, I'm loyal, and I'm reliable, and I'm empathetic, and I'm supportive. In fact, when Jesus died on the cross, he entrusted his mom to be taken care of by John, the golden retriever. Mother, your son, your mother. It's easy to be driven crazy by all the different personalities that we work with or we live with or in our families. But what if we learned how to read the room and love each other and lean into each other? You know, last year we did a series, a books club called The Six Conversations that really talked about how do you read the room and how do you engage in deeper conversations with people. It's a real practical book. I read it last year. I had a business guy in our church that went through the book. And he says, I'm going to try that out. Next time he went to a wine tasting, I'm going to try not just talking about Bengals and weather, but just get a little deeper using what I learned from this. And he came back, he said, Chad, this was amazing. I just had such amazing conversations with people I've known for many years just by going a little bit deeper, learning how to read the room a little bit more, how to engage a little bit more. It was just outstanding. Recognizing the strengths in people different from you, loving people different from you. Mr. Rogers had this song he would sing to kind of help encourage you to do that. It's called Fancy. Some are fancy on the outside. Some are fancy on the inside. Everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine. Your body is fancy, and so is mine. Boys are boys from the beginning, and girls are girls from the start. Everybody's fancy, and everybody's fine. Your body is fancy, and so is mine. Girls grow up to be mommies, and boys grow up to be daddies. Even there, he's trying to show boys and girls were different. They could love each other. They could adapt to each other. They could see the fanciness of some people are pretty on the outside and inside. It was just a song to help teach that. How do we read the room and love and accept people despite our differences? The second thing Fred got from Jesus is this attitude of gratitude. In fact, he got, at his 30 years, he was asked to go to the Emmys to get a Lifetime Achievement Award. It's pretty amazing. You've never heard the speech. I'll give you kind of my summary of it mixed with another speech he gave. Tim Robbins walks up, and Tim Robbins said, Lifetime Achievement Award, all the celebrities want to give to Fred Rogers, 30 years to the best neighbor any of us have ever had, he says. Fred Rogers walks up, they play his theme song, and he looks out at the audience, and he says, it's a beautiful day in this neighborhood tonight. And everybody cheers and smiles. He says, I want to thank all of those who believed in me. The people who are here, the people who are far away, the people who are in heaven, who gave me the chance to do what I love. Then he turned the spotlight off himself. He said, can you think of the people who invested in your life, who made you who you are today? Can we take a few seconds to think about them? I'll grab a piece from another speech he gave. He said, the people who sang you into singing, the people who loved you into loving, the people who believed you into believing, who are the people who made you who you are? Then he looked out at the celebrities and said, I'll give you 10 seconds to do that. I'll watch the clock. Let's take maybe 20 seconds and think about the people who made you who you are today. In a moment of silence, like Mr. Rogers gave as a gift that day. Who shaped you, loved you, and directed you? Who coached you, parented you, helped you? Fred said one of the gifts in our noisy culture today is we care more about noise than we do about wonder. We clutter our lives and we don't give ourselves the gift of silence. He then went on to say, I want to thank my family. I want to thank my friends. I want to thank those in the family company for giving me the chance to do what I love, to help kids see how loved they are. May God bless you all. And even in a moment that was supposed to be about him, he made it about everybody else. He said, think about who you just thought about and how awesome they would feel that they made such a difference in your life that you're thinking about them today. Isn't that great? Jesus has this interaction about forgiveness that's so powerful. He goes to this village one day, and there's 10 lepers. That's a medical condition that made you so unclean. It was contagious, and you also weren't allowed to go to temple, and your whole family you'd been isolated from. And these 10 lepers come up to him, and they had to stand far off. That was part of the protocol. I'm a leper, but I really want to talk to you. They lifted up their voices, and they said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And he said to them, go show yourself to the priest. Now, you weren't supposed to show yourself to the priest unless you were healed. It's kind of his way of saying, if you trust me and go to the priest, I'll heal you on the way. Wow. So sure enough, as they went, as they believed, as they went on, they were cleansed. They were healed. They were washed. And one of them, when he saw that he is healed, returned with a loud voice, glorified God. Thank you, Jesus. I can hug my wife again. Thank you, Jesus. I can be with my kids again. Thank you, Jesus. I can go to community again. I've been so isolated and so alone for so long. Thank you, thank you, thank you. He fell at his feet and he gave thanks. And by the way, Jesus in a Jewish community, it wasn't the Jewish guy who came back to him. It was the Samaritan. The people was different from him. The person who is unlike him politically or racially. Then Jesus turns to his disciples and says, hey, were there not 10 people that I cleansed? What happened to the other 9? Were there not any found who would return to give thanks to God except the foreigner? He said to him, arise, your faith has made you well. Now, I'm sure the other 9 were grateful, right? They probably just, I need to hug my wife. I get to see my kids. It's not that they weren't grateful. They just forgot to return. The Bible in the book of Romans, written by Paul, that lion over there we talked about, he says the greatest symptom in your life that you're not in alignment with truth or God is not being thankful. When you know God but you don't thank God, you're not thankful, you become futile in your heart and in your thoughts. Boy, if you told me 100 adjectives to know that I'm out of alignment with truth and God, thankful would not be my first adjective, but it's God's. 3 things we can learn kind of from this parable. Number 1, unexpressed gratitude from those 9, when you don't say it out loud, unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. Right? I'm sure if we interviewed those 9 people, oh, I'm so thankful. You never said it. Number 2, returning thanks fills not only the thanker, but the thankee. When we're thankful, we're filling other people up. Now, God doesn't need our thanks, but we need to fill ourselves up by saying, God, thank you for my life. Thank you for my breath. Thank you for my opportunities. Thank you what you've given to me. When you are in alignment with thanksgiving, you're in alignment with truth, you're in alignment with God. And lastly, as we learned from Romans there, gratitude, it aligns my thoughts and my heart to something bigger than me. Fred Rogers on a show one day, he took out a piece of bread and he showed it to the camera. He said, see this bread? Whenever I see a slice of bread, I'm so thankful. I've never thought of thankfulness when I have a piece of bread. I'm like, what are we going to eat? He said, when I think of a piece of bread, I just take a moment and I'm thankful for the farmers who grew it, for the truckers who shipped it, the stockers who stocked it, the designers who designed the wrapping for it. I'm thankful for my mother who prepared it or made it. I'm thankful for the chance to make a sandwich for my wife or my kids. And something as simple as a slice of bread could be a chance to meditate on being thankful. Isn't that beautiful? One day he was reading the room and trying to teach encouragement. There was this young mother who was kind of frazzled. She was running a toy drive, and things weren't going well. Donations were down. Things were chaotic. Kids were running all over the place. And Mr. Rogers walked over to her and just read the room and said, "What are you most thankful for that did happen today?" She took a deep breath and said, "Well, there's a kid named Marcus who got a toy for the first time, and that's filled me up." And she realized that little bit of gratitude changed her whole frantic demeanor. She started with that little bitty volunteer organization. Every day before they got to work, they would take a moment and mention two things they were grateful for, and it just changed the dynamic of the organization. Mr. Rogers was in, I think it was New York one time, and this young dad came up to him. He was a father of a special needs son. He said, "Mr. Rogers, I got to tell you, I'm so thankful for you." He said, "Well, tell me why. What's going on?" He said, "I have a son who's nonverbal. He has he's autistic. He hasn't said any words. But he loves watching your show every day. And about 6 months ago, we're watching your show, and my son looks at me, looks at the TV, and says, 'X the owl.' I didn't know my son had a voice. You gave my son a voice by talking directly to him. In fact, now he says the names of like three of your puppets. And I am so thankful for what you've done in our family's life." And can you feel that? Thanksgiving fills the thanker and the thankee. Think of how many people in your life would just be filled up by you being a returner. Right? Be the one of the nine. Be the returner. I want to be the one daily that sends a text, sends a note. And here's the secret to being a returner. You notice and you mention. Some of us, we don't notice because we're too busy on the next thing. I can be guilty as charged. We forget to notice. How can we put some patterns in our life to notice better? Others of us notice, but we don't mention. "I told her I loved her 12 years ago. If anything changed, I'll let her know." No one can see your heart. No one. They can only hear what comes out of your mouth. If you want to be a returner, both to God and to the people in your life, notice and mention. It can transform lives. Somebody who's in your life right now is discouraged and depressed, and you don't realize it because it's one center stage, it's all put together. Then you wonder, man, why did they kill themselves? No one noticed. No one mentioned. No one dug down. I've never had anyone ever come into my office, marriage, family, and say, "You got to stop him. He just encourages me too much. She's just too affirming. Always mentioning what I do right, right, right." I've never had a teenager come in and say, "Oh, my parents, they're just far too encouraging. They get me. They listen to me just far too often." How might all of our offices be better, all of our communities be better, if we would just be a returner and we would learn how to notice and know how to mention? I invite the band to come out to this last song. It's probably a song you've heard before, but I love the opening line because it's kind of somebody doing what Mr. Rogers picked up from Jesus and saying, "Man, when I walk in a room, I'm going to look for those eyebrows that maybe are carrying a little stress. I'm going to look for the people who are maybe a little discouraged and their shoulders a little bit down. I want to notice the people around me, and then I want to draw near to them. Even people who are different than me, there's one of those otters over there, there's one of those beavers over there, there's one of those lions over there. I'm going to recognize their individual strength. I'm going to adapt and see their weaknesses are unique to that particular leadership style, but I'm still going to love them and encourage them." How can we lean into the people around us, let them know they're loved and cared for, and they can be themselves?